Redistricting. Why did Todd Rokita get moved out of his district? The Indiana House maps. Did the GOP really ignore incumbency? Education reform, full-day kindergarten, immigration reform, Purdue Pete, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 15, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, two Indiana congressmen live in the same district under a new redistricting proposal. Republican Todd Rokita has been placed in the 5th district along with Republican Dan Burton. Some observers see it as an effort by fellow Republicans to punish Rokita, who defeated State Senator Brad Hirschman in last year's primary. Rokita can live in one district and run in another, but it's not recommended.
There's a tendency to try to use this process to punish or reward people. And, you know, the public is very disenchanted with that.
Congressman Rokita could easily move if he chose, was thinking about it. That's up to, you know, whether that's still true or not, I don't know. But it was not intentional to do anything, you know, vicious to him at all.
Is the GOP redistricting plan a good one? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Marie Clark, John Schwantes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Schella. Marie Clark, the district line, I'm told, was drawn down the street in front of Todd Rokita's house. What's the message there?
Well, there's no message here. He fully expected for the line to move west where he is. The line is more consistent with what he had said, that we have to pay more attention to county lines and so forth. I don't think he's surprised about this. I think
he's not surprised because he was told it was coming.
Well, but
right?
I don't think he was, Jim. I think he's always intended to move more in the center of this district, which is likely to be Lafayette or Brownsburg or Danville, so I think that was in his plans anyway. And I think the maps are good maps, particularly when you hold them up to the maps that are in existence right now.
How long did you practice that so you could say that with a straight face?
The process is way too high profile. This is the most high profile redistricting we maybe have ever seen.
So your question was it deliberate? The answer is of course it was. Of course it was. I mean, it was clear from as early as last year when he beat Brad Hirschman that he was going to get it if they could deliver it, and they delivered it. So he can move, or he can run against Dan Burton.
Well, Todd Rokita has said that he will run for re-election in the 4th District, which he represents now. Will he move?
Oh, I think he has to move. And he has indicated a willingness to do that. As Murray said, Lafayette, some town in Hendricks County or, you know, somewhere in that kind of general vicinity, I think, is where he'll move. And he really did the smart thing because I think everyone anticipated that. I think more the thought was that he would end up in the 7th District with Andre Carson. And he did the right thing. You wait and see where they're going to put the line, and then you make your move from that.
Because if he hadn't waited to see, they would have drawn the line differently.
Unless he'd moved over close to the Illinois line, you know, then they'd have a hard time doing that.
Two concepts aren't mutually exclusive. Murray does have a point. These are cleaner boundaries. They're more compact boundaries than what we've seen in the past.
Some districts.
But there is the but. Clearly, when you're drawing the line, Jim, as you say, down the street in front of there was a lot of pent-up frustration, as has been noted. A lot of people, I think, wanted to send a message. I mean, the only thing clearer would have been a severed horse head in his bed or something. That was last week. But this isn't nearly as messy or bloody, but it still sends the message.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about the congressional maps in general. Huge changes. For example, the 9th District, which used to run along the river, now runs from the Louisville suburbs all the way up and includes all of Johnson County.
Yeah.
That's a big difference.
Oh, it's a big difference. And, you know, the idea that they all have the same sphere of influence or the same concerns and all that is ridiculous. I mean, this was done with a computer, and it was done, you know, the victor goes the spoils. The Republicans fixed it so that they would have the tremendous advantage in this, and they have it, at least temporarily. And what they happen to do, when you talk about incumbents here, he was the only incumbent not protected. All the other Republican incumbents were protected.
In fact, in many cases,
Rokita.
And in many cases with the other incumbents, their primary opponents were moved
just
out of the
district. Miraculously moved out of the district.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with your premise, so I don't think the Bouchon camp's overjoyed with the 8th district.
Well, you got what you got. You know, I mean, the problem is you are constrained somewhat where the population is and where he's located.
Right,
okay?
He got the remainders.
Yeah, he got the remainders because he isn't high on their totem pole list either.
Okay, but
they made a choice.
Mm-hmm. Before these maps, with the old maps, you got 7 Republican districts and 2 Democratic districts, even though you got 3 Democratic congressmen. Donnelly won in what is a Republican district. Now you've clearly got 7 Republican districts, and there appears to be an effort by the Republicans to try to make the 7th winnable. Is that right?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I would hope so, but I mean, I think it's still a Democrat district. The 7th is obviously
Andre
the first.
Carson's. Yeah. Okay. Any concern about the 7th?
No, I don't have a concern about the 7th. But what's interesting about that is the 5th is more competitive now. I think Stutzman is the one that really benefited from this redistricting because that's
third,
a much more Republican district. And I think they were trying to stick it to Burton at the same time.
That may be. I also am interested in the 6th district, which now instead of is going so far north, goes all the way down to the river.
Yeah.
But I would observe in about the 9th, you know, instead of going from Cincinnati down to Louisville and almost all the way to Evansville, they just tilted it up, and you still have suburban interests because you have suburban Louisville, suburban Indianapolis. So at least that argument's somewhat plausible.
But the difference it makes is to run in the 9th now is a much more costly proposition because now you buy Indianapolis television in addition to Louisville television.
All right. Time now for viewer feedback.
Well,
each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, are the new congressional districts drawn fairly? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, fair is in the eye of the beholder. Last week's question was, can Barack Obama win Indiana twice? 47% said yes, 52% said no, 1% said it's up to Mitch Daniels. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Then there's the new map for the Indiana House of Representatives. It's a controversial plan that puts 11 of the 100 lawmakers in districts occupied by another incumbent. That means there will be 11 vacant districts. When a committee in the Indiana House asked for public input, however, much of it was positive. Watchdog groups that include Common Cause applauded the fact that districts are more compact than the ones drawn 10 years ago. Circumstances like the one that has 3 Democrats, Ed Delaney, Greg Porter, and John Day in the same district produced little concern.
That's unfortunate, but we understand that it is a consequence of population shifts that need to be recognized when you're drawing these maps.
It is clear for the most part that you didn't take into account incumbent legislators' addresses, and I think the people of this state thank you for that.
And Delaney, do you really think that the Republicans ignored incumbent addresses?
I mean, that is the most absurd statement I ever heard, because they knew exactly where those incumbent addresses were, and they drew the districts exactly the way they wanted them to be drawn to make certain they could maximize the number of votes. If you think that they didn't consider the addresses, you must believe in the Tooth Fairy, the Easter Bunny, and Santa Claus all together. They certainly did consider it, and they drew them with that in mind.
And so what the Republicans did, if you buy that, that line of thinking is they matched up 2 Republicans in 3 different districts, but in pretty much every case there's a retirement coming that it seems apparent, and then they're able to match up 3 Democrats in other districts where you got people going head to head, and they can sell the argument that it's fair, right?
Well, I'm told that John Day was taken out of the 3-person district.
But it's still a 2-person district.
But, I mean, then why would they put Jeff Espick in with Dan Leonard? I mean, you know, I would say that...
He mustn't like Leonard.
Strategically...
You say Leonard hasn't always been in favor of that caucus.
That's why.
But Jeff Espick is not happy. I mean, he can't be happy. He's got it. And
Tom Dermody's not happy. He's thrown in with a Democrat, Nancy Dembowski. I mean, there are unhappy Republicans. Sure. But this is, I mean, to suggest that they didn't draw these maps with the idea that they could create the largest Republican majority possible would be
crazy. Because you've gone from 24 competitive districts down to 14. And that's what the whole purpose of this was, the 24 to 14 to maximize their majority.
Okay, so... earlier Ann said, to the victor go the spoils. She mentioned that. And then I saw your question from last week. I have a good friend in Speedway that says, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Fair is at 38th and Fall Creek.
That's fine. Just admit it for what it is. Don't try to tell us this was done fairly.
I'm a political guy. I saw it. I lived it in 2001. I saw it in 1991, and the tables have turned.
The tables have turned, and it's equally
unfair.
But
don't tell Jeff Espick that.
Putting incumbents together to this degree, it's been done before, but never to this degree.
Right. I think that was eye-opening, whether it was an intent. I mean, you've read a lot into sort of the retirements and who's been with the caucus and who hasn't. Maybe that's part of the algorithm they plugged into the computer. I don't know, but it's an interesting map, and obviously, given that we've had 1 week to consider the map, it's generated a lot of sparks in that amount of time. The issue for Democrats, they can, and this is obvious, they can cry all they want, but with a 20-seat deficit in the House, there's not a whole lot they could do, especially since, as we've talked about on this show before, this was a traditional, quote-unquote, walkout issue. It was the maps that have sparked...
If they hadn't already played that card.
And Pat Bowern and the caucus is on record as saying they won't do it again. So,
are the watchdog groups naive?
I get to answer that. It's difficult to say at first blush exactly what these things do, but I don't think that they accomplish what they had hoped they accomplished. I think they're still highly political maps, and
But they're always going to be, aren't they?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Until you take it out of the process that
unless
it's in
unless you get an independent commission.
That's right, and even
that's
then,
not going to happen.
Well, that's right, because they have
control. Although it has happened in a lot of other states.
I'm talking about Indiana.
And I will observe one other thing about this politically. In 1981, the maps were taken all the way to the Supreme Court, and it was believed then that these were incredibly Republican maps. So,
there's a difference now.
By the end of that decade, though...
But that's because they created triple-member districts.
Right.
There was an obvious issue there that
But the by the end of the decade, against. By the end of the decade, the legislature had flipped from a seemingly impervious Republican...
Right.
Majority to a Democrat majority. So anything can happen. These things are not foolproof.
They've done something different this time. They've created, there are no such things anymore as party competitive black districts. All the blacks are in defined districts. You're not going to have any blacks running in districts that are split by race. And that's a very interesting phenomenon they did. Because I'm not sure that that's the purpose of the Civil Rights Act. The Voting Rights Act. I mean, to put all blacks in one district, but that's clearly what they did.
Moving on, U.S. Education Secretary Arne Duncan is in Indianapolis for a town hall meeting with the governor at a charter school. It comes days after the state Senate voted 29-20 in favor of a bill that would expand the number of charter schools in this state. The Senate debate was long and emotional as Democrats and some Republicans fought the idea of letting more state universities and mayors become sponsors of charter schools. Indiana has 60 charter schools now, and the bill eliminates all caps on the number of charters. Schools that are exempt from state and district rules, though they must meet the same accountability guidelines as other public schools.
We were led to believe in the beginning that they were better, that they were the answer. We know now, after years of testing them, that they're not the answer.
But 8 out of the 10 bottom-scoring ISTEP scores were by charter schools.
As Senator Greg Taylor, preceded by Senator Tim Skinner, with the losing arguments in that debate, John Katzenberger, will the governor get all of his education agenda?
Oh, I don't know if he'll get all of it, because there's still, there's still not a lot of money to start spreading around and make things happen. But, you noted earlier this morning that he wants to fully fund kindergarten now, and he may have the opportunity to do that. It looks like this charter bill is going to move. It looks like there's going to be some form of vouchers in the final outcome. So I think he's going to get a very good slug of it.
What do you make of this visit by the U.S. Education Secretary?
Well, I mean, they do have shared interests. This is one area, and there aren't a lot of areas of intersection in terms of philosophy and opinion between the Mitch Daniels administration and the Obama administration. But this is one that this is no surprise. I mean, when you've heard kind things coming out of Mitch Daniels' mouth about the Obama administration for months now, it's often been about Arne Duncan and what he's tried to do with education in terms of charter schools. So that part's not overly surprising. But to your point about Mitch Daniels, you know, he's scheduled to give this speech, and I'm sure it'll be very closely followed at the American Enterprise Institute on May 4th. And I don't know, you know, he's been known to take the easel out and have the check boxes. I don't know if he'll do that gimmick for this speech. But if he did, there'd be a lot of checks and a lot of boxes when it comes to education and the reform he has pushed this session.
Yeah. Bringing Duncan in at this stage of the process, I mean, how did that come about?
I don't know how it came about. I know this DOE works with the federal DOE. The argument's been made by the governor and the superintendent of public instruction for some time now that at least part of their reform agenda is consistent with
sure.
the federal administration. So I don't know how much strategic impact that made. I think more important strategically is the revenue forecast discussion and the infusion into
we're going to get to that in
education.
A second. Is the governor with this visit by the secretary thumbing his nose at Indiana Democrats?
I don't know that's the case. I think there is some support in the caucus for charter schools. There always has been.
Right.
As long as there's accountability. The forum
but
shopping.
In the Senate, all the Democrats voted against the charter schools.
Well, I know. But there is still some in the House for charter schools. And if it maybe it's on the limits. You know, one of the things we talked about when these things started was you needed pilot programs to see whether these worked and produced results. Now you have a charter school in Indianapolis that isn't producing results, and what are they doing? They're forum shopping for another sponsor. What's wrong with that picture? I mean, if they do a good job, then that's terrific because they're still public schools, but they have to be accountable. And just willy-nilly letting anybody open these, it doesn't seem to me, goes for accountability.
That's a big point because the State Board of Accounts in the last, month or so, took to task an Indianapolis-based charter school for what it saw as perhaps a blatant disregard of the transparency standards that are required of other schools, and that could be the thorn in the side here of proponents of charter schools.
And that's one, by the way, that the Bart Peterson administration didn't allow to open and operate for just that reason here.
As mentioned, the governor also agreed this week to spend $150 million in new money on public schools. A quarter of that money would be earmarked for full-day kindergarten, helping Mitch Daniels keep a campaign promise. The money comes from an improving economy. The new forecast of state tax revenues includes $760 million in new money, but most of it will go to rebuild the state budget surplus. John Swanes, what's most surprising about that announcement?
Well, the things are rosy. That's perhaps surprising and good news. But clearly there was a lot of support for full-day kindergarten and that funding. So that's I think he'll score points there and advocates. That's pretty widespread support for that. But the money also that's going to be earmarked for teacher merit increases, I think, is worth noting. Because this, you go back to the model that he had with state employees a few years ago when the governor took some heat for basically doing away with collective bargaining traditional, as it had been under the Democratic governors that had preceded him, for pay increases and so forth. And what did he do? He came back and said, well, you adopted my system, which is no collective bargaining, and you're getting raises, the first raises in a number of years. Now, this could be an attempt to silence some of the criticism by saying
$5 to $10 million
you'll have teachers getting merit increases at a time when they're frustrated, perhaps, by giving up their collective bargaining posture they had in the past.
Has state government survived the recession?
Well, it's not out of the woods yet, Jim. There's still, I mean, this revenue forecast is rosy, and rightly so, because the numbers indicate that there should be this kind of growth in the economy. But you look at what's going on around the world, specifically in the Middle East and in Northern Africa. You look at the disasters we've seen in Japan. You look at the effect on the world economy, and it means that we're in a fragile situation with the economy, and it could go south in a hurry. I think that's why the governor wants to put a lot of this, sock a lot of this away into the reserve, because if it doesn't materialize, then Indiana won't get hurt. So the bottom line about your question, Jim, is that we're getting close. The shoots are green, the daffodils are blooming, but the economy still could get frozen out.
Should more of this new money be spent?
No, I actually agree with John on that. I mean, it's good to know that the Obama stimulus package is bearing fruit here, which it is. But as the president has warned us, it's going to be a long, slow growth. So I think it makes sense to be conservative. I don't know whether the merit pay. It seems to me the school systems have been hit really hard by cuts, and restoring some of those cuts would be the most appropriate. But I've always supported full day kindergarten. I think that was one of the education pieces we've been missing in Indiana for way too long. We should have preschool as well.
This is really artful politics, isn't it? I mean, the governor cut $600 million out of school budgets over the last 2 years, and now he comes up and says, I'm going to give you $150 million more, and I'm going to fulfill this campaign promise, and he's getting applause. Nicely done, wouldn't you say?
Well, that's what I was talking about, the strategic importance of this in terms of getting the rest of his education package through. So yeah. I think you can't look at it in a vacuum.
The immigration reform bill has been watered down significantly this week. It no longer has English-only provisions for government documents, and police no longer have Arizona-style authority to question a suspected illegal immigrant. That didn't prevent a three-hour-plus hearing where both supporters and opponents of the bill lined up to make their feelings known. State Senator Mike Delf has pushed this bill for 4 years, but this is the first time the Carmel Republican has been granted a hearing in a House committee. Opponents say illegal immigration is a federal issue that should be left to Congress.
When they're taking our jobs, when they're taking our jobs, and they're hurting our economy, and they're weighing down our system, it's a Hoosier problem.
Chairman Davis, you will never be asked to prove where you're from. I will, because I have been in the past. You will never know what it's like to have that feeling of the federal government.
Judge Jose Salinas there addressing Chairman Bill Davis and Delaney. Will Mike Delf let that bill pass?
I don't think so. I mean, he's going to use this issue to demagogue on it, to raise money, to raise his profile, and he doesn't want to say the issues or the problem solved. So I don't think he'll let it pass.
The governor finally stepped up this week. He's been silent on it. For 4 years, he's not said anything. And this week he said that if there's a bill, it should address employers and not the workers. And that's where this headed all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, he did step up. You know, this state is like so many states. You know, we're having a hard time. Sent the author aside, this state is having a hard time figuring out its center of gravity on this issue. And, you know, other states have worked on it. Utah has a model that, you know, there's a consortium here that has pointed at, a bipartisan consortium. So, you know, I think that the discussion is good, and it may not pass this time. It's not going away, I suspect. So I applaud what the House is doing. We'll see where it ends up.
You know, Jim, you lauded Mitch Daniels in the last question for the political savvy he showed in the windfall he received as a result. I'd say this is an even bigger long-term benefit, and I'll say why. This is a thorny issue, as Murray suggests, and it doesn't cut cleanly across any number of constituencies. Initially, the bill, of course, would have been a lot more devastating, potentially even to businesses, because it could have revoked business licenses and so forth. This scales back from that and deals with the elimination of tax deductions and so forth, so it's not as onerous there on the business community. At the same time, he can tell the Tea Party movement and so forth, we push forward if, in fact, this passes and he signs it. He can say, we're still doing something about the problem, we're taking it on. But if he runs for president, big if, the last thing he probably would have wanted is to have signed legislation that would have put us in the same camp with Arizona and alienated
the
Latino community, which is very important.
He's going to have to sign legislation.
Well, but it's still very important.
Do we end up with a bill? Do we get legislation?
It's possible, but unlikely. I think Senator Delf is very firm in his conviction about...
Not sure he's in control of this bill.
Well, he may not be in control of it, but he can have some say about it in the end. You know, it's been amended. It has to go back. And he's not going to sign off on
it. But it could
changes.
Have been very problematic for the governor. And it, no matter how this turns out,
he's
it's not going to be nearly as problematic.
He's got all kinds of social issue problems to vote on.
Finally, less than a week after debuting a kindler, gentler Purdue Pete mascot, the old standby is coming back this week. There was such a huge negative response to the new kid-friendly, happier, soft-headed Pete who roamed the sidelines at the Boilermakers spring football game at Ross-Ade Stadium that change was made. Athletic director Morgan Burke says the fans have spoken. The Purdue Pete of the last 30 years is the one the school will go with. He last changed looks in 1989. And some people thought he was due for an upgrade. Murray Clark, did Purdue do the right thing?
I support the decision of Morgan Burke for Buff class of 68, the second best college athletic director in the United
States.
That can
only
be
Fred Doyle. But you know, as an IU fan, I really welcome the notion that Purdue Pete, who scares little kids, is going to scare the next generation of potential athletes away from Purdue and into the arms of IU.
Morgan Burke has had a tough spring.
And
as an IU alum, if Purdue wants to stay hard-headed, let him stay hard-headed.
Nobody from Purdue here. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Murray Clark, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.